Here's what you can look forward to in today's episode.
So I think that the challenge for the industry right now is to attract those talents and to culturally understand that the world has changed, that the code of, you know, what a research company should be and what type of staff a research company should hire have changed, and that we need an influx of fresh energy from, you know, the less traditional staff.
Over the last decade, the market research industry has been disrupted. Our largest agencies are struggling to keep up as their customers turn to newer, faster, and cheaper data sources. Now, we are on the edge of yet another major market shift. Now is the time for us to reassert ourselves as the rudder of the brands we love. Thank you for tuning in to the Happy Market Research Podcast, where we are charting the path for the future of market researchers and businesses. Hi, I'm Jamin Brazil, and you're listening to the Happy Market Research Podcast. Today, my guest is Frederick Charles Petit, CEO and founder of Toluna. Toluna connects businesses with consumers to deliver real-time insights. Under his leadership, Toluna has had a successful and storied legacy, playing a key role in the market research space. Frederick, thank you very much for being on the Happy Market Research Podcast.
Thank you for inviting me. I'm thrilled.
So what did your parents do, and how did that affect your career?
Yes, I think that's a very good question, actually, because you know, my father, which is a role model for me, was an entrepreneur, and across his career, he had to to change business, move countries, and I think I always looked at him as a very hardworking person, always working hard and trying to show the example, but also very low profile in terms of his talent or his authority or his interaction with people. And I think that influenced me into, you know, wanting to build a business. And I think that's a role model, clearly. And I saw the same with my mother. She was not working. But she was a very hardworking person as well. And she still is, actually.
The subject of humility is interesting, especially from contrasting the earlier generations to modern generation. There's a lot of self-promotion going on in social media now, gosh, myself included, I guess. How do you think the tension, or where is the tension between humility and then at the same time talking about your whatever it is that you're doing in order to promote your brand, your products, and ultimately yourself, so that you can have a successful modern career?
It's a good question. I think that you can still be humble. I mean, the low profile for me is being humble. And having this mentality of a challenger. But by that, I mean that the minute you believe you're a leader and therefore you should have the status of a leader, which I don't know anyone who would think like that, but I think that you're already lost, the envy, the traction, the appetite for growing and for change. And I think being humble and passionate, I think these are tools that can follow you during all your career. And you can still be humble and be proud of what you've achieved. But, you know, I think that there is a fine line. And clearly, times have changed. But you can still be, try to accommodate the two.
Tell us about your transition from your early career in law to a startup of Toluna.
So yes, I wanted to be a lawyer, and I became a lawyer. I did a corporate law M&A. I studied in France and at NYU in the US, and I was in the US from 1995 to 1997, which doesn't make me younger when I say that. And I saw a lot of the startup and, what we used to call the new economy. And I came back to France, I started law, and, after very quickly I understood that it was not a path for me for the reason that were linked to my role model, i.e. my father, because I thought that law could be entrepreneurial as well. that I could, you know, I could create my own law firm and build a practice, but with my expertise, which was corporate law, M&A, and the fact that I wanted to play on a, you know, with the large law firm, it was impossible. So, you know, I was very excited about the internet and the ability to, you know, start a business at that moment in time, which I felt was unique. 1999, 2000, that was uniqueness in that moment. And I, you know, I decided to move on and create that that company.
It was a really interesting time in the US at that point in time for dot-com based companies. In the middle of the Silicon Valley, it was just crazy, crazy, crazy everywhere you went. What was it like in Europe?
In Europe, you know, I think things have changed a lot, but you know, I was living in France by then, and in Europe, there was, you know, excitement and you know, a feeling of being intrigued by the internet and the startup culture, but it was much harder, and especially in France at the time, you know, it was harder to, you know, to start a company. To, you know, to just starting a company, even if you were not raising any funds, was very hard. Even if you had the funds, you know, opening a bank account as a corporation and doing all that. So there was a lot of excitement. People were a bit dubious about the reality of those business model, because, you know, a lot of the business model were, how much cash do you burn, or, you know, how much eat on your homepage. And people were saying, but how much revenue? And at the time, not much. So it was a dual feeling, I mean, in terms of, but clearly things have changed. I mean, in France especially, I mean, it's a much more entrepreneurial culture than it was back then.
Does it feel like the startup culture now is similar to what it was in 2000?
Do you mean in general, or you know, or I think it has changed in a way. It's much more sophisticated. I think it's, you know, I feel that although, you know, we were not, you know, the first one, because I founded the company in 2000, so I was quite late if you compare to the US, but I was in the first wave. I think that back then you could come with an idea and a business plan and start a company and raise the money. And that's what exactly happened to me. I had an idea. I, you know, we drafted a business plan and we went with that business plan. And on the back of that, not even having created a company, we raised the money. I think that with the dot-com boom and then the dot-com bust and the sophistication of the investor and things that have changed, and there is a much more organized process from when you start to when you raise your seed and your Series A and Series B and so on and so forth. So, you know, it has changed. I think it's not easier, I would say, today than it was back then.
How did you navigate to Luna to survive the 2001 dot-com bust?
That's another good one. I think that, you know, there was this, all my friends were in law firm, and, you know, they all said, Frederick, it's great what you've tried. Why don't you come back? And so I'm very, it's what we call, there was B2C, back to consulting, and B2L, back to law. And I was very stubborn. And I did believe that, you know, consumer opinion and the opinion of the consumer would change the interaction between brands and consumer and e-commerce. And so, you know, and I felt as well, which is very important, I felt a sense of, responsibility. In terms of commitment to the investor, that they entrusted me with that fundraising, and my role was to fight very hard to survive during that period, which was like really the it was the winter of the internet economy in Europe. It was really awful, I have to say, because everywhere we were going, it was in the research industry at the time, and we were trying to explain that online was going to change, you know, the industry just purely on the data collection basis. Everyone was very, most of the people, I would say, not everyone, most of the people that we met at the time were very, I don't know how to say that in English. They didn't believe in it. They said, you should come back in 10 years from now. And so it was very tough. And so the way you survive in those moments is that you regroup. You stay focused on a very few items. You have to change your business plan. You have to change your ambition. Sometimes it's a day of reckoning, you know, what you wanted to achieve versus what you can achieve within the period. And, you know, I was fortunate to meet a couple of people who were very, very nice with me, because I had still my fundraising at the time, 2001. And one has become a friend. So I was going to launch for us in France, a massive ad campaign for people to join the community, the Tuluna community. And so I went to a number of agencies, big one, very big one, small one, medium one, like maybe, you know, had a lot of time, 10 agencies to get a feedback. And, you know, the one agency I choose came back after 3 weeks. And we had the contract to sign, and they said, we have the recommendation for you. And I said, okay, give me the recommendation. And he said, it's one word, don't do anything right now. And I was very fortunate, because I met these guys who basically helped me save the money to go through that very tough period.
I love the attitude and the mindset of conservative growth, especially set in the backdrop of such a crazy economic period for startups. We've got this mantra, run to revenue, race to profit. It really tries to get to, you need to build your core product and then get customers. But as soon as that core product is in place, you absolutely need to stop that burn ratio and move the business to sustainability.
But it's tough. It was tough. So a lot of good people, I have to say, that I met during these years, and it's tough. You have to make those choices, and sometimes you choices are imposed upon you.
In 2014, you acquired Harris Interactive. What was that acquisition thesis, the biggest challenges, and the outcome that you were the most proud of?
So, you know, first of all, I'm the CEO of a company called ITWP, which is mean in touch with people, actually. And ITWP owns two companies, owns Tuluna and Harris Interactive. So in 2014, we acquired Harris Interactive Europe, France, UK, and Germany from Nielsen. And that was quite a transformational acquisition. You know, it was... The acquisition was on the basis that we believed that there was a thesis, as you said, for digitalizing an online research agency. And by that, I mean that you can be online, but you're not digital. By digital, I mean using technology to produce and deliver insight, almost in real time or in real time. And so we felt at the time that Tuluna had a lot of this end-to-end technology, DIY, consumer data, communities, and that we could use all this Tuluna technology to help Harris Interactive digitalize itself. Because Harris culture was already online, interactive, And it was easier. And it was really a business case. We said, we're going to take this agency in a market which is, you know, flat or flattish or even declining for, you know, traditional research, custom. And by using you know, by leveraging their expertise, leveraging their, you know, relationship, and leveraging the technology of, you know, Tuluna, they're gonna grow ahead of the market. And that's basically what we've done. And that was very challenging. So what I said initially to the team, I said, this is the first year. I want you to keep 100% of the staff, and I want you to keep 100% of the client. And I'm not here to disrupt. I'm here to help, you know, on that digital journey. And basically we did it. We grew the second year ahead of the market. And since then, I believe we've beaten the market year after year. And Aris Interactive is, I believe, the example of a digital research agency building the agency of the 21st century, which is the combination of, you know, end-to-end technology, access to seamless access in real time to, you know, either people's opinion or behavior, and consulting expertise, but not repeating tasks that you can replace by automation and technology, reinventing the wheel project after project, because the market has changed dramatically. And what I believe brands, you know, the brand manager or the marketer wants, they want almost real-time access to people's opinion and behavior. And so I think that it means that you absolutely need the digitalization to deliver on that. So I think that it was a bold move, but I think the move was right when looking back.
In every acquisition, there's this 1 + 1 = 3, and you got to figure out where that the value is. More often than not, what I see in the thesis is, you know, reductions in staff, in a minimum, redundancies are removed. How did you handle that differently?
Because it was not a cost-driven acquisition. It was really a growth-driven acquisition. And you know, the fact is that we needed the expertise of the researcher in order to basically go back to growth. But we needed the staff, the member of staff, to do higher value engagement with clients, and not the repetitive one that you can replace by the technology. So that's really what was driving, you know, the rationale for keeping, you know, the headline was 100% of the stat, 100% of the client. Now I understand that if you're doing an acquisition of companies that are where there is overlap, then obviously you need to act differently.
What steps would you take if you were trying to get hired in the market research industry today?
You know, I'm sorry if I'm going to reverse the question, if I may. I think that, and please, I mean, that's my perception of the market right now. If I'm a recruiter within a research agency, the question I would ask myself day in, day out would be, what steps my organization shall take to hire the talent out there that may decide to go somewhere else than in research or in a research company? Because there is so much choice for people who are data-driven, and so much choice for people who understand, you know, path to purchase and can use it in a variety of segment or vertical, other or industry, other than within the context of a market research industry. They could go to consulting, they could go to media, they could go to e-commerce, they could go to even brick and mortar and do that. So I think that the challenge for the industry right now is to attract those talents and to culturally understand that the world has changed, that the code of, you know, what a research company should be and what type of staff a research company should hire have changed, and that we need an influx of fresh energy from, you know, the less traditional staff that the research companies have recruited. So I think that if I was a graduate and I had choices, cards in my hand, and I wanted to go to a research company, I would show my difference versus the traditional researcher. And by that, I mean, we need what I call traditional researcher, people who understand, the fundamental, rules of research and the foundation of research. But we also need these people who have, who are, crunching data, people we call data scientists, engineer, people coming from different backgrounds, and who certainly have across the board, the ability to do it themselves and have learned that. And I think that's I think that there is a larger challenge for the research industry to attract the talent. So how can we make ourselves more attractive?
One of the themes that I've been seeing emerge over the last 5 years, even more than that, is this responsibility for the entire organization to conduct research, not just the market researchers. And so it's created an empowerment, which is great for everybody from the intern to the CEO to be able to conduct research. But this democratization of access to insights is creating some level of confusion. And a good example is I have an international relationship with an international tech company. They've got 5 full-time market researchers and they have 40 full-time UX researchers, so that are partnered with the product team. And those 40 people are fitting outside of what is traditional market research. However, they actually are doing customer satisfaction, segmentation, et cetera, a lot of the same type of work. This is causing confusion across the organization because you'll have sometimes conflicting results, customer satisfaction being one of the more obvious opportunities for conflict. So how are you seeing this materialize in the industry?
Yes, it's very interesting what you're saying, because we're founding members of the Insight on Demand Consortium. We have right now, I think, close to 150 companies who have joined the consortium, a lot of consumer brands. And one of the stream of discussion in the consortium is how do we cope with the silos between consumer insight and CX? And how do we make sure that maybe we create more link within, and is it possible within the organization between those two practices or those two departments? Because they, in a lot of instances, they operate in silos. And I think that's an issue moving forward, because you need a lot of the crossover or the joining those dots. I think that's quite important.
What are the 3 characteristics of an all-star employee at Taluna?
Yeah, I think that we have a series of values. And those values, we basically, it's not just to put them on the wall. I do believe that the values of the company are, what unite the staff, and when the staff need to regroup, when things are tough, and the values make the staff and the company excel when things are going into the right direction. So, I think that the first thing is that if you're working at Taluna, and I've learned that over the years, you need to share the values of the company. And the values are, a couple of the values are meritocracy, which means that, you wherever you are, wherever you come from, you have a chance of, building your career within the group and growing within the group, regardless of which region you are, which department you are. And that's very important, rewarding talent. The one other value is that we like bold move. That's what we like. We like making a move, like, you know, the move that we've made over the time. And those ball and standing by the ball move, we like to act as one team that succeed. Not just being one team, but one team that succeed. And these values comes back to the early days of the company where we were like 15, 20, 50. So I think that's the first thing. And I've learned very, you know, sometimes it was tough. I've learned that if you recruit someone that do not share the value of the organization, of the company, it's problematic. I think that you need to have obviously, you know, the expertise, but that's I would say that's a given. I mean, if you recruit someone for the wrong role, it's a mistake for both parties. So that's a problem. And you have to be passionate about your work, because I think passion is a tool that you can use to, you know, to go faster, to win. And I think that there needs to be a sense of loyalty between the company and the individual back and forth. And I think that's, you know, that's sharing those value, having the right skill set, and ensuring that we help people get to, you know, the position where they can excel, and also having loyalty back and forth. So I think that a company has multiple constituencies. And actually that was my thesis when I was a law student, was the constituencies of a company. And the constituencies are obviously the shareholder, you know, and we need to give back to the shareholder, the clients, the staff, and the community in which you operate. So I think that we need to look at those things when we recruit someone. And sometimes we make mistake, we have to reckon the mistake. I have, you know, over time, sometimes when we were much, you know, when I was doing a lot of the recruitment, I made some mistake. You know, I recruited people who were excellent in their job, fantastic, but didn't share at all the value of the company. And, you know, and so that was a problem. And we have to reckon that. And it's not reckoning for just the company, for the benefit of the company. It's for the benefit of the two parties, the individual and the company. And there are, you know, stars within Tuluna, a lot of them, that have grown very fast within the company because we trust people. We trust people are doing, you know, wants to do better, wants to do their job better. And the trust that we're giving them is I think critical to take bold move, to act as one team, you know, to not just satisfy client, but, you know, delight them, to be the company. And that's all I said that yesterday to the team. One of the first thing I said when I founded this company, I said, we want to be the company. It's very simple, that answer the phone at 6 p.m. on a Friday to a client that needs us, because we'll be the company that client would call at 9 a.m. on a Monday. And that was very simple values. It was delighting customer. But at the time, I didn't need to put them on the board because we were only 25 people.
One of the benefits about being old is, for me, is I can look back over my career and see how different choices I made have impacted where I am today. And one specific example of this, I was working with Braden Johnstone and a client on Christmas Eve in order to solve a particularly difficult project that was in field at that point. We worked Christmas Eve, we worked a little bit on Christmas Day, project wound up going great. And that particular client was Edwin Wong, which was my very first brand interview I did at Happy Market Research. So you got to remember, you know, this is right in the early days of Decipher. In fact, Holland Partners at that point where he was working at the time was only 5 people. So, I mean, this is super early in everybody's careers. You fast forward and now he's the head of insights for a major brand. The decisions and the way that we act in those early days massively, there's a big lever there that impacts our personal brand and how we're viewed later on in our career. And I believe that it's a core tenet. If you treat people well through your process, then they'll be there for you in the end.
Exactly. It's, you know, I remember once we had through an acquisition, we had someone there, very nice person. and a client calls, and it's a true story. I sit in the office, it's a Friday, and the client call, and the phone is ringing, and the guy doesn't move. And I said, are you answering the phone? He said, yes, but we need to educate the client. They can't call us, you know, after an hour. And you know, we just acquired that company. It was one of the, it was not one of the senior manager. It was one of the, you know, one of the business manager of the company, a very nice guy actually. And I said, no, wait a minute. You know, I'm not teaching the client any lesson. That's not the role. I mean, I try to work with clients. But we're here to serve the client. So if they're calling at, you know, 6 or 7 p.m. on a Friday, it must be very important. And so culture, you know, that's where I confronted myself very long time ago to the fact that culture is key, that you have to share the same culture. And you can be different. You can operate differently. But the fundamental set of values needs to be the same for success. Otherwise, because when things are growing, when the overall market is growing, no one cares. But that's when the market gets tougher, that if you don't share a set of shared values, then it's I think that the overall organization is in a, the English would say, in a sticky wicket.
What is one of the secrets that drives growth, profitability, or success for Toluna?
You know, I think that we have to recognize that companies have cycle. And so if I look at the current cycle, I think that where we are right now is the reward of decision that we made 4 or 5 years ago. And the decision were looking back, very simple, but, you know, at the time, they were quite bold. We always invested in technology. We always had an understanding internally, more internally actually than externally, that Toluna was a technology company. And that we believed very early on, and I, you know, it's easy for me to say that now, but that's the truth. Very early on, we believed that technology would be a, you know, the key driver of change within the research industry. Because the research industry, it's a fantastic service industry, but, you know, if you want to scale it for the digital world, you need more than having offices everywhere. You need a strong, scalable technology that automates a lot of the tasks and makes data or insights in real time. And we really believed in that. And so we invested ahead of the market, the same way I think we invested ahead of the market in 2000 for the transition from offline to online. So the growth trajectory that we have right now in this market is really linked to those decisions we've made, and we sticked to the decision. So we believed in the decision, we checked for the signal that these were the right decision, and we stick to those decisions, and we regrouped the overall company. We motivated all the staff around those technology investment and in order to digitalize research. And I think yesterday I was talking to the staff and I said, our growth trajectory is linked to three words: digital, digital, digital. And that's really what's driving our growth right now. It's, you know, delivering insight in real time, to brands across the globe, and automating research in order to make sure that our clients, you know, can get, you know, the result faster, make their decision faster, and be able to make, you know, research and deliver research at the speed of business decision. And that's really, it's not about 3 weeks, it's not about 2 weeks, it's not about, you know, 3 days. Sometimes it's a matter of hours. And we have to understand that. These are the way decisions are made within organization right now.
You were very early in the mobile space. In fact, I think you had the very first mobile app for panelists. Can you talk to us about how that decision was made?
Yes, I think we came back. So there was two step. One was, before the app in 2006, 2007, we looked at what we were doing and we said, we need to reinvent the way we interact with the member of our community. And we were really a consumer opinion platform, a platform where people would give their opinion about product and services and so on and so forth. And so we regrouped and, going back to talent, and we had a lot of session discussing, brainstorming. And so we came back with the concept of social voting. Social voting meaning the ability for consumer to create and exchange opinion through votes. So the ability for consumer to almost build their own research. And so that's when we decided to, create a, change the new Todoona becoming a social voting community. And then clearly we decided to create a DIY suite. We were already doing software as a service, communities and things like that, but we decided to go very high speed into investing in DIY. So because we said the same way consumer will create their own vote, and they're currently exchanging, votes online. At the time it was online, the brands and the companies will do it themselves, some of them at least. And we need to give them that ability. And naturally we decided to build the app. But when we launched really the Todoona quick survey platform, more than the app actually, because the app was for consumer, so it was not so visible to the market. It was for the millions of members of our community. But when we launched Todoona quick survey, there was a lot of people which is a DIY real-time platform to generate consumer insight. A lot of the players in the market didn't even consider that research. And so in a way we were very fortunate, but we were also a bit questioning, why is it that we're not the only one, but we're a few, to understand that, it's going to have to be delivered in real time. And for that, you need a community of consumer who can, exchange votes on a real-time basis, and in the course of exchanging those votes and voting on subject, can basically be placed in front of the subject of the brand or the companies or the research companies or the consulting or media agencies, and all that in real time. So I think that there was no difficulty in the decision, because we tend not to, if we have a strong belief about a development for the company, we listen to the constituencies, the client, the board members, but we tend not to listen to, the rest of the ecosystem, who usually, like us sometimes, do the same thing for, every day for years and may not see what's happening next. So we try to keep that external view of where the market is heading. And it's hard, because we've been in this market for 18 years.
What is Todoona doing right now that is getting a lot of traction?
I think that what we have is an end-to-end technology platform, which really empowers user to be more agile, to adopt new research approaches, be able to do what I call, do-it-yourself or assisted do-it-yourself research for the enterprise market. And that's very important. So it's not DIY, and by that I'm absolutely not negative. It's not DIY for moms and pops. It's DIY for the enterprise market. And so by empowering the user to interact with the platform, interact with millions of consumers in real time, we give them the ability to make better and faster decision day in, day out. And so I think that's why that's really what we're bringing to our client. And there are a lot of stories like that of brands who have shifted from doing things that were taking weeks to doing things that now are taking hours. And I could give a lot of example. There are so many examples where we're seeing brands using our technology in real time to inform, you know, be it their advertising campaign, their new concept, giving them the ability to iterate. And the word iteration is absolutely important when it comes to launching new product or new ideas in the market or adopting new ad format. And so that's really where the company excel in terms of the digitalization of research. And, you know, it's driving the growth of the company. And I think it's very synchronized with that moment in time where we are.
My guest today has been Frederick Charles Petit, CEO of Taluna. Frederick, thank you very much for being on the Happy Market Research podcast today.
Thank you very much for having me today.
Next time on Happy Market Research, Dave Carruthers, founder, CEO of VoxPopMe, talks about Twitch, their relationship with video, how it's driving business insights, as well as we break down AR and VR. Hope you'll tune in.